I've gotten to the point where I really enjoy just, you know, pushing myself and the effort.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 504, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just want to give you a quick word from today's sponsor. Today's sponsor is Health IQ. Did you know? It's quiz time. Did you know that runners tend to be more health conscious than the general public, at least here in the States? I don't know. Maybe other places in the world, not so much. But here in the States, runners tend to be a little bit more health conscious, a little more proactive towards taking care of ourselves and just being healthy. I mean, it's part of what we do, right? And did you know that because of that, our risk profile of premature death tends to be a bit lower than the general population as well. And as such, Health IQ does a wonderful thing for anybody that's in the market for life insurance and is a runner or triathlete or cyclist or just somebody who worries about their health. Health IQ has partnered with a bunch of different life insurance companies to offer better rates, lower premiums on life insurance because our risk profile is lower than the general population. So stop subsidizing everybody else's life insurance costs. Get yourself a good rate, a better rate, a discounted rate on what you can get if you just go shop in the market by yourself. So if you're in the market or if you need to readjust your portfolio and add a little bit of life insurance to what you have or to what you currently have, definitely would encourage you to head over to healthiq.com/dizruns. And that way, you know, you can find out all the information, get details, get a quote, talk to an agent. And if you talk to an agent, make sure you remind them as well that you heard about Health IQ here on Diz Runs Radio. All right. So now, without any further ado, let's dive into today's episode, shall we? Hey guys, my guest today was first on the show in episode 444, and now he's back for a round two. I've learned firsthand just how difficult and time-consuming it can be to publish a book, and my guest today has actually recently released his second book, two books in the span of just a handful of months. So I don't know how he finds the time to do that kind of thing and promote them and move on to the next thing and keep going, but he does. And when he was first on back several months ago, we talked about that first book, which is titled Your Best Stride. And I would definitely encourage you, if you haven't checked out the book or that episode, to go back and do so as well. And today we're going to really dig into the new book, which is called Run Strong, Stay Hungry, 9 Keys to Staying in the Race. So without any further ado, it is definitely a pleasure to welcome back to the show former Running Times editor, high school cross-country coach, and lifelong runner, Mr. Jonathan Beverly. So thanks for coming back and joining us again, Jonathan. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. It's really great to be here. Thank you.
Oh, definitely. Pleasure is certainly mine. And guys, all the same contact information is still the same, but just as a reminder, jonathanbeverly.com is the website, JonathanBeverly.com. Just like you would expect it to be spelled, nothing crazy there. The handle is the same on both places as well for Twitter and Instagram. If you want to connect with him on social media, at JBevRun, JBEVRUN. And if you missed the first chat, like I said, I would encourage you to check it out. The link there is dizruns.com/444. And it's probably still recent enough, depending on when you're listening to this. If you listen to it when it first comes out, certainly is, that it's still probably available in your podcast player app, whatever it is that you use to listen to this episode and whatever other, or this show and whatever other podcast you listen to. So just scroll down to episode 444 and grab it. And the show notes for today's episode, which will obviously have links to everything that we talk about, to his new book, the old book, last episode that he was on, in case you want to check out any of those resources and anything else we talk about, dizruns.com/504. So you can head over there to get the show notes and links to anything that we talk about. So, Jonathan, the way we start the show is still the same, but I'm going to assume that your answer to the simple little question of favorite distance to race and why probably hasn't changed much in the last 5 months. So I'm going to throw a little curveball at you right off the gate here, and flip one word out of that sentence and say, what is your least favorite distance to race and why?
Oh my. Well, I just don't race things that I don't like. But I'd say over the lifetime, probably my least favorite probably is the mile. Mm-hmm. Even though, I mean, there's obviously some satisfaction in that and seeing just how fast you can go. But I think the mile really, really hurts.
Yeah.
In fact, one time in Running Times, I thought, let's do a survey and some scientific research and say, what really is the hardest race? You know, everybody thinks that their event is the hardest, mm-hmm. the marathoners or the 800 runners. And as far as like being at the, you know, at your aerobic limit for the longest, they say the mile, 1500 the mile is really that takes you right to the edge. If you're doing it right, mm-hmm. you hurt. A tense hurt longer than any race. Now, that doesn't mean, I mean, like the marathon is tougher for different reasons, mm-hmm. and the middle ones are tough too. I mean, like the 5K is tough for you got to go fast for a long time, but actually just taking yourself right to the edge of what your body's doing, that's like 1500 wow. the mile.
Yeah, it's funny to hear the different answers to you know, typically the favorite distance to race, but a lot of times it's I like this distance because, you know, these other the shorter distances hurt too much, or the longer distances it's so long and it's just such a grind, or whatever the case might be. But with this one, it's an interesting you know, I feel, just, you know, anecdotally, I feel like the 5K definitely hurts me worse than racing a mile, which I've done a couple of times. But maybe that means I'm not racing that mile right. Maybe I need to push a little bit harder from the get-go instead of saving just a hair to try to finish a little bit stronger.
Yeah. Well, that may be just, maybe you're already racing 1500 really well. You know, you're taking yourself to the limit and holding it there.
I don't know about that.
And maybe you have some more natural speed too. I mean, that's the thing with some of us who, like, I think the fastest quarter I've ever run is like 64. But you know, I run a 5K in mid-16s,
right.
So you keep it going. So
yeah.
Third of the mile is really tough for me to run to run fast and compete well at it too. So.
Right. Well, and maybe for me, it's a case of I don't do it very often, and there's not a whole lot of opportunities where I am, at least, to really run and really race a mile. I mean, you can always go out and just run a mile by yourself, whatever. But to actually have like an actual race where it's just a mile, it's basically in our area, there's like one of those a year. So it's kind of something you almost look forward to test yourself, versus the 5K, which is kind of my least favorite distance. It definitely is my least favorite distance, because there's just so many opportunities. So it's like you almost maybe get burnt out just because there's never a shortage of the opportunity. Whereas for me, the mile, there's a little bit of a novelty to it, because it's only on special occasions, if you will, that I really get to go out there and run with other people who are also pushing themselves for a mile at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. And to tell the truth, it's been a long time since I actually raced a mile. So it would be kind of fun to see. So
yeah.
I'm learning actually to appreciate the 5K a lot more. And I think that has to do with something we'll talk about here in the show is you know, running by feel and really dialing into what 5K pace is. And I think a lot of times 5K is painful because we don't pace ourselves, right? We think of it as a really short race and go out too hard and suffer for the rest of the time.
Yeah. There's probably more than a few people that are listening that can say that they've learned that lesson the hard way. I know I certainly have as well, where the pacing issue is something that I don't know that we ever fully figured out, but you certainly try to keep dialing it in every time you run whatever race you're running, that just to try to pace yourself a little bit better and figure out how to run each race slightly better, slightly stronger, slightly maybe more intelligently as we go. But but before we get into the book, I was wondering if we could just real quick do maybe a recap or a refresher for those that either haven't listened to the first episode, or, you know, since it was several months ago, kind of forgotten, you know, just a real quick kind of your running history, kind of the Cliff's Notes version. I know that, you know, you kind of started running in high school and ran your first marathon in high school. And then kind of how has running, you know, over the next 40 years that it's been basically at this point, kind of stayed in your life and ebbed and flowed, and then we'll kind of dive into the book, because I really do want to dig into a lot of it, because there's a lot of great information in there. But just a quick recap of your running history, if you don't mind.
Sure. So as you said, yeah, I started in high school primarily because I wasn't good enough for any other sport, but quickly fell in love with a sport that rewards tenacity and consistency and perseverance more than natural ability. So much so that, you know, I felt like every time I went longer, I did better. So I ran a marathon at age 16, which people say, do you recommend that? And so if somebody's wants to do it, I have no problem with it. And in the research I've done that even, you know, 12, 13 year olds are able to handle it. They have to build up like anybody else and have to be. And the problem is when the parents are more motivated, the kid, but you know, that's a tangent there. But anyway, I loved it. Didn't hurt me at all. In fact, it I think, set me up well for, you know, when I got to college, I figured out pretty quickly I was paying my own way. I had to work and I couldn't do that in sports at the same time, but I kept running, kept training on my, you know, like most adults do, you know, early mornings and late nights and training for marathons and other races. And then there was a lull during grad school, and I got married then and kept running, but didn't race much. And then there was a point in my life, about mid-20s, where my career took a downturn. I was feeling pretty disillusioned with some things, and I needed a goal, say, you know, something that I could know I could put myself into and it's going to come back. It's not sullied by politics the way the world normally is. Things don't direct. There's not a direct correlation between effort and results. So back to the marathon and spent a few years trying to break 3 hours. And then once I did, I dropped it pretty quickly after that. So during my young 30s, I was living in New York, working in administration at NYU, which wasn't that challenging. So I put myself into my running, coached with Bob Glover and ran on a team and set all my PRs during that time. During that time I was writing just for fun, and that kept building to the point where I said, yeah, quit my day job, wrote full time for a while and became editor of Running Times. So then I, you know, totally into the sport. Of course, wasn't going to give it up then, but there was a time about mid-40s when started getting hurt, as everybody does, because you don't adjust to being old. You don't believe you're old. And I thought, well, you know, I'll keep running. Obviously, this is just who I am now, but I'm not going to compete anymore. That didn't last very long. I missed it too much. I found that I really love competing, even if I couldn't be as fast as I used to be, and continue to find challenges to up to now. I'm 53 and, you know, have ups and downs and keep learning how to compete as with an aging body, but love it. I mean, I was at a conference last week and jumped in a 5K and once again was surprised at how much I enjoyed the challenge of seeing what can I do? What's the best I can do today?
Right. What is, in your estimation, I mean, what is the desire for the competition? You know, like you said, and like we talked about a little bit more in depth the first time we chatted, you know, your athletic career basically has been running, always kind of pushing yourself. Where did that drive for competitiveness come from, do you think?
Well, I have to say, being the small geeky grade schooler, that there still is the feeling that I need to prove myself all the time. That's kind of, maybe that's not the best motivation, but there's nothing wrong with that either. That saying, yeah, I want to know that I have it. And then I think there is definitely a much deeper, I say, almost philosophical reason that we need this, and that is, we're wired for struggle, and to be able let me go back to, there's a book called, The End of History and the Last Man by Francis Fukuyama. Maybe you heard about that, about 1990s, but he talks about how, you know, the world history goes from barbarian tribes to basically a sedentary lifestyle now. That all we do is try to earn enough money to be comfortable, and we're not satisfied with that. We have this need to prove that we have choices and we have will. We're not just following the path of least resistance to, yeah, and whatever our stomachs tell us to do, our needs, but we have a will. Mm-hmm. And that's part of being human, is to say, I choose this just because I choose it. And I think running is one of the few places we have a chance to do that, to say, I'm willing to, you know, put myself through some struggle, through some pain and difficulty, just because I can't. I'm choosing it. I'm in charge. You know, it's my body tells me, no, you can't do this. And my mind says, yeah, you are going to do it. Mm. There's some really deep satisfaction in that. And I think that we seek that. And it's running's a lot better way to do it than going to war or some of the.
Yeah, certainly agree with that. Has that competitive desire, it doesn't sound like it, but I just want to still ask anyway, has it changed over the course of your years in the sport, or has the way that you has it changed? How has it changed? How has your running changed because of it? How has that played out over these many years?
I think the primary way it's changed is it used to be a little more means to an end. I used to, you know, take a lot of satisfaction in, you know, setting new times and beating other people. And that's still fun. Even in the 5K run last week, you know, some colleagues I went by at mile one. It's really fun. It's fun to do that. having said that, I even, you know, like doing speed work and things, I used to do that in order to race fast, but didn't necessarily enjoy it. I've gotten to the point where I really enjoy just, you know, pushing myself and the effort and the chances to say, yeah, wow, I put myself in that situation. This is where I want to be and feel good about that, regardless of what the results are.
Gotcha. The competitiveness and I think that's a good tie-in maybe into the book, because one of the big things I noticed right off the bat, and we'll get into a little bit more specifics as we go, but something that we've already kind of touched on and gone in a roundabout way, and the competitiveness, like I said, I think is right there as well, is this need to adapt ourselves and our place within the sport as we go, the longer we're in it. I mean, you know, just from an aging perspective, like you can't do the same things that you did at 18, at 20, at 25, you know, when you're 40, 45, 50, whatever, as far as running paces, as far as, you know, maybe you need to do more upkeep of your body as you keep getting older to prevent breakdowns and physical breakdowns, things like that. So kind of to bridge into the book a little bit, we'll start with you maybe. How has your career, beyond just the competitiveness maybe, but or maybe that's the big thing, but maybe there's something else, mm-hmm, to it. How have you seen running adapt for yourself since you started in high school on the cross country team to where you are today?
Wow, I mean, there's been so many changes, and part of it is just, you know, paralleling life, is that, mm-hmm, whenever you move, whenever you, you know, Running partnerships are like friendships. They come and they, sometimes you're running with one person a couple days a week, or, you know, you're part of a team and then they get injured or they move away, or, mm-hmm, so all of those patterns have changed based on, yeah, living in New York City or living where I live now on the border of Nebraska, Colorado, your daily, the venue that you're running is so different. But then also I think that, you know, there's this adage that we're experiment of one, and that's true. But I think sometimes we think that, you know, once we solve that experiment, then we're done for life. And we get tied to that. You know, I know that I need to do 60, 70 miles a week and one VO2 max workout and one tempo run and, mm-hmm, a fast, but it's long run. And that got me my PRs in the marathon. I ran a marathon last spring and I think I had the idea that I had to do exactly the same thing and took myself a little bit over the edge, that I've had to adapt of how much I run, what days I run, how much recovery I take. And then as I get older, this sort of led to my first book, the Stride book, is I found that just the running, you know, just keeping going the way I always had was leading to injuries. And I had to take seriously how to, you know, the mobility and the strength to improve my stride to be more efficient in order to keep going. So yeah, so the types of non-running things I do as far as exercises and stretches are very different now than they were in the 1980s. and even the, you know, the training, the weekly schedule and what I do or what I do typically for speed work. Part of that is learning, just, you know, as we have learned, the whole sport has learned different things. You know, we used to do static stretches beforehand, right. And now they say, you know, that actually weakens the muscle. So, you know, dynamic stretches, but even this actually, my son is 16 and I coach him. And so he's been around me, you know, for the whole 16 years and sort of knows what it frustrates him when I say, you know, I'm starting to modify towards, you know, rather than the lunge matrix that leg swings might be more important or in combination. He's like, oh, Dad, you know, we've always done the lunge matrix, you know, don't change it. It's like, I think we have to change though. We should change. We should learn. We should adapt. And then sometimes you have to just right. because you know, things, the same thing isn't working anymore.
Yeah. That's there's that saying, that you never step in the same river twice because it's constantly moving. It's constantly, you know, the water that's here in this one spot right now, you know, the next second it's downstream. So it's constantly changing, constantly always in motion. And we're certainly that same way, whether we always want to admit it or not. Where we are today is going to be different than where we are tomorrow. And over time you add a bunch of those days together and your needs change. What works and what doesn't work may and probably will change as well. So you have to be willing to adapt for anything that you're going to do, over a period of months, weeks, years, whatever.
Yeah. And one thing interesting I found, and I found this in researching the book and also in my own life, is that it's almost easier to change, you know, the warm-up pattern you do than to change the way you think about certain paces and times, that you really get locked into sort of, you know, a good comfortable run should be 7.5 minute miles, to say, you know, and now if I go out and I start out and I have to start easy because I need to warm into it, but yeah, you know, I'll look at my Garmin and it'll be 9 minute mile, and there is a visceral emotional reaction to that, and it's like, okay, get over it, that is what it is, accept it and go with it. But we really have strong emotional attachments to times and paces.
That's interesting, and it makes me wonder, with the, you know, in my mind at least, a lot of the adapting that we need to do as we get older, as we log more miles, as maybe we're coming back from an injury or we're trying to prevent an injury or whatever it is, the different ways that we change our routines, goes a lot to the physical, and sounds like maybe there's a bit of mental adaptation that needs to, or that should happen, or at least that maybe is a good thing to happen as well. Like you said, just to accept some of the pace differences, or that you can't go hard as often as you, maybe you need more recovery time or whatever it is that something that you found as well, both for yourself and people you talked to with the book?
That's huge. In fact, that was one of the biggest surprises writing this book, because, you know, I interviewed these 50 people and I thought the most book was going to be about training. It ends up, you know, of the 9 keys, three are training and 6 are psychological. That's what people want to talk about. That's what gets you through the changes and the years is getting your mind around how to think about training, how to think about yourself, how to think about your running. And so, you know, that was interesting, and I think it's true. In fact, I'm beginning to come to the idea that, I mean, that even injuries tend to be mostly, people get injured more because of their ego than anything else. they end up being training errors, but they happen because we can't accept what today's reality is, or where we fit in the pecking order of our group, or something. That's where we get in trouble is when our egos get in the way of what we should be doing.
I agree, and I'm curious if any of the folks that you talk to, or again from your own examples, are there any tips or ways that we can combat that, or is that just something that almost you almost just have to take your lumps and kind of go through it and learn that lesson the hard way to kind of get out of your own way sometimes from the ego perspective?
don't know about tips, but there certainly is our perspectives. And that was also was fun to, you know, having done the interviews and seen some patterns, I went to, you know, some of the psychological literature. And I think in terms of, like, you know, we talked about sort of the paced reactions, yeah, that when you, this is what you should be, you know, I feel like I should be running my, you know, I still think of my marathon pace as 6:20, you know, mm-hmm. I'm a 2:45 marathoner and it's a 6:20 pace, that not true anymore, and there's nothing that's not even close. I mean, I would be happy to run a 5K at 6:20s right now. Mm-hmm. But I think that the key there for me is then to realize to take some distance from it, to say, okay, what, why did that, you know, why did it get that got locked in? Is that was my best, and I got a lot of self-esteem from that, but you need the humility to say, you know, even at that's a pretty slow pace in the world scale. You know, mm-hmm. people can run 4:50s, you know, right. Or, you know, 2:04, and have the perspective of there's a lot of people faster. It was always arbitrary, mm-hmm. and so the question is, you know, why was it special? It was special because it took me whatever, you know, 15 years of training in marathoning and learning and to get to there, and to, you know, feel good about that. But again, the key is what is the best I can do today? Even then, it was the best I could do then with the body I was given and the training I was given and the time and the, you know, the resources. So now I have to add to that. Okay, now it's a 53-year-old body, mm-hmm. and the joy is in the mastery and the improvement, not in the absolute time. It was always arbitrary, and it maybe you do have to take your knocks to realize that people, nobody cares nearly as much as you do. You know, so I even went through a phase of, like, I didn't want to, you know, you didn't want to have your times out there. You didn't want to have people see that you ran a 1:32 half. Yeah, right. when I could run a 1:16 time. That is so silly, you know. Right. And again, yeah, on the scale of things, to a lot of people, that's a really good time. And to a lot of people, that's a really slow time. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter. It's good for you. And that's what matters. And for me, has to change, or else you have to give it up. And that's what, mm-hmm. the people I talked to that gave it up, I mean, a lot of them were just, if I'm going to run what I consider a good time, I'm going to have to train so hard I'm hurt. Yeah. You know?
Right.
So you just have to change what's a good time. But the real challenge there is to do it, to give up the absolute without giving up the motivation. I think part of the reason we're afraid to give up the absolute is then we just sort of the compromise. Well, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever I do today is fine. We want to have the motivation to work harder and to say, so I think we have to change the absolute is not in the time and the measures, but in the effort. And is it really the best I can do? And have I trained the best I can? Those are the questions to ask, not, you know, again, what the result the time is.
Yeah. And that takes me back to something that I had read, probably about a year ago or so now, it was actually more of a business entrepreneur type of book, but it's funny how oftentimes the lessons from other parts of life, you know, really mirror you can take a lesson from anywhere just about and plug it into your running. Sure. And a lot of times it works out, but it was talking about, instead of always focusing on the results, you need to focus on the outputs, which would be the results. You need to focus, mm-hmm. on the inputs, you know, like if your race performance isn't what you want it to be, you know, that's the output, but look at the inputs. Did you do everything you could? Were you good on your training? Were you good on your nutrition, on your diet, hydrating, sleeping, all of the little things, the ways that you could, you know, that you do those things and it's more likely to result in a good race day performance, or did you slack on that stuff? So no wonder that your output, that your race day performance didn't come into, and it wasn't what you wanted to be, because, you know, you can control all the inputs theoretically, but the outputs, you know, the results of your race, aren't always all in your control completely. You know, the weather could be bad. You could have a crazy course. You know, lots of ups and downs, or maybe it's a trail race and there was a big rainstorm the weekend before, so it's more washed out. Or other runners. I mean, there's just so many things that can impact how your performance goes. That to get all of your meaning or all of your everything hinges on just the outcome. What is the time on the clock when you cross the finish line? It leaves a lot of things to chance and can really lead to frustration, burnout, just disappointment, and just being fed up with it and just saying kind of the hell with this. I can't get any faster, so I'm done. So that's, like you said, it's a good way to make sure you're focusing on the effort. Are you doing all the things? And then you can kind of, you know, hopefully the clock at the end will be what you want it to be, but it's not always the case. And that doesn't mean that it was a bad day at the office or a bad race or anything like that.
Yeah, it's a really good perspective. And difficult to learn, but essential. One of the things when I'm coaching high school, I try to, we have goal sheets, and I try to separate between goals and dreams. And so you're saying that, you know, the dream is I make state and I set a PR, but you don't have total control over that. You know, the goal are the, like you said, the inputs, the things, you know, I'm going to run smart. I'm not going to give up at any point. I'm going to, you know, kick harder. Yeah. So those things you can do, and regardless of what the final is, you can feel good about that. And then when the dream happens, you celebrate it and you're happy about it, but that doesn't nullify. I mean, and outside, I think, you know, again, with the high schoolers, they have a little bit more tied to the actual outcomes, mm-hmm. in terms of like state or scholarships and things. But for most of us, it is really arbitrary. And, you know, if you train 6 months for a marathon and ends up a hot day and right. you're in 15 minutes slower than your goal was.
That doesn't mean it was a bad day.
It was a waste. That 6 months was a waste. That really, you know, and that's perspective to learn. That was valuable.
Yeah. And I feel like it's like a lot of things in my life, at least, I feel like I've had to kind of learn that the hard way by being upset or being frustrated that, like, I did everything right on, you know, in the months leading up to this race. And like, why didn't I run as well as I wanted to? And it's like, oh, well, like, let's stop to think that there was this and there was that factor and that, you know, you didn't eat what you would normally eat before, or whatever it is. There's just so many other factors that may contribute. I've tried to get better. Although I would be lying if I said that there isn't still just a little bit of me that's like, you know, that the clock at the finish does still matter a little bit, and maybe that'll never change, but at least my perspective has changed a little bit on that's not the end all be all anymore. Are you there?
Yeah, now I am.
Okay.
All right. So at the end of the day, still valuable.
Yes, exactly. So, I have a couple of other good questions about the book that I definitely want to get into, but first just want to take a second and pay a couple of bills and thank the folks from Health IQ for sponsoring today's episode. You know, Health IQ, what they do as a company is they work with life insurance providers to give rates that are a little bit more favorable to those of us that take care of our health. So as runners, as people who are striving to be more healthy on a daily basis, you know, we can maybe get some better rates on term life insurance than the general population, who maybe, you know, some folks in the general population that maybe don't take as good care of themselves as we tend to do with watching our diet and making sure we're you know, obviously exercising and improving our health and being more proactive in our health. So if life insurance is something that you need to maybe look at, and especially here as we get towards the end of a year, sometimes that's one of those year in review types of things, is looking at the financial portfolio and making sure that everything is where it needs to be. I know talking about life insurance isn't always the most rosy subject, but it is something that a lot of folks probably should consider. So if you need to reassess your life insurance needs, Health IQ might be a good place for you to check out. And if you want to support the show along the way, you can either head over to healthiq.com/dizruns, or once you head over to Health IQ and fill out the information and get a quote and you're talking to an agent, make sure that you mention you heard about their offerings and their services here on the show, which gives me a little credit, which maybe keeps them around. So we got more sponsor support and you know, continue to remind you of this and offer this so that when you do need your life insurance needs met, you can go through Health IQ. So thank you to them for sponsoring today's episode. So Jonathan, again, I want to dive a little bit deeper into the book, but one question I have for you with the new book, Run Strong, Stay Hungry. Who is the book specifically for? Because I keep going back and forth that maybe it's for, you know, for people that are either young, you know, like high school runners that are still in that competitive mold, and like, you know, you really love the sport, and these are some of the things that you need to keep in mind as you age and mature and running changes in your life, because you're not always going to be 16 and running for the cross country team. And then sometimes I think maybe it's more for people like myself who got into the sport in their, you know, really seriously got into it in their 30s and are kind of at that point where, like, yeah, maybe my fastest days are behind me. Maybe not. Maybe there's things I can do to improve my time. But, kind of keeping that long perspective, like, I want to run until I can't, until I'm not breathing anymore. You know, I want to run for 50, 60, 70 years, whatever it ends up being. So maybe there's lessons in there for me. From your perspective, when you're putting this book together, who specifically is the book for? Because I think it covers a lot of different folks, but who is the primary person that you wrote this book for?
I love that intro to the question, because that's, I would say, yes, it was is for all those people. And as I was writing, I tried to keep that in mind. I think people will see it primarily as a master's runner's book. And perhaps I think those, like you said, the people who particularly like are just starting to get to that point of the last PR and what is there after the last PR will benefit the most. But I tried to write it and I think it can speak to a runner at any age, at any level, that wants to run for a lifetime. All these principles will help you run your best at 27, and then also continue. Mm-hmm. I think it is for any runner. But I do think like I said, the ones in the late 30s, early 40s, on up through whatever age. That's dealing with the aging process will get the most out of it, because people who are 27 don't believe they're ever going to get old. So it would benefit them. It would be hard to get them to focus on it.
Gotcha. With the interviews that you had, like you said a couple times in passing, as we were talking, earlier, you talked to, upwards of about 50 people that it started running early. And some that gave up the sport, some that have continued on and run, at the Olympic level, the professional level, and everything in between. Have and if so, how have those conversations changed the way that you work with the kids that you coach, the high school runners that you work with? Has it changed at all? Like trying to add some of that perspective, or like you said, since they're young and brash, they just don't have any quote unquote need for the veteran wisdom for what running is going to look like for them 20 years from now.
I think it's changed significantly. In fact, I think coaches would be one of the target mm-hmm. audiences that both, usually it's personal running has come to this point, and then how they coach would change, because in a number of areas, but probably the primarily one is this chapter on humility and hunger, that all these people, even Olympians, the ones who continued were the ones who said, and they would all say this. I'd get into the interview and they'd say, "I was never that good. I certainly wasn't the best one. I always had to, I was the back of the pack." Those are the ones who continued for life, and often had great success, but didn't come into it with the idea that I was, I was talented, I was fast, I was really good at it. And I think there is a real danger in our society that we think that, the secret to life is to defining what you're good at and then exploiting that, reaping the low hanging fruits. That is really dangerous for runners. The girl who sets the school records in seventh grade is much less likely to be running at 30 than the one who's, spends 3 years in JV and finally makes varsity. Mm-hmm. Because, what happens, the dangers of success are that you get attached to the success. The winning becomes the goal and the running is just the means to the end. And a couple of, psychology books there. One talks about that, how it distorts, how external rewards distorts how we see things. And then the other is mindset by Carol Dweck, mm-hmm. which I think is a huge book. You talk about, sort of outside, it's not a running book, but it certainly applies to all this, that you either see the world as fixed mindset. This is the way things are. There's winners and there's losers, there's fast runners and there's slow runners. And if you are a fast runner, then the only reason you run and race is to continue to prove that and mm-hmm. to show the world that you're fast. So then there's a growth mindset, which says everything is in progress. So how you face difficulty is entirely different. If you have a fixed mindset, something's hard, Well, you avoid it because you might fail. And if you fail, it says, well, then you aren't fast or you're not a winner. You know, mm-hmm. So it was a growth mindset is, oh, this is hard. Good. Let me see if I can overcome it. And this is a challenge. You know, you put yourself into a race. You know, there's a junior high state. It's just sort of invitational where you can choose to be in the, you know, in the championship race or the open race. Put yourself in the championship race, you know, even if you're going to finish 27th rather than in the open race and finish sixth, mm-hmm. in order to say, okay, this is a challenge and let's see how well I can do and can I get better? Not, I need to prove to myself that I'm good. So in terms of coaching, I've tried to be really careful more than I used to that, you know, all the accolades aren't just for the external success, you know, for the people who are gifted, mm-hmm. That you cheer just as strongly. I mean, first you have to pay attention. And I think as coach, you know, what the 10th girl's best time is, or, you know, best place. And you cheer just as much for her, you know, improving by 30 seconds as you do for the one who wins. In fact, you know, the one who wins it and maybe didn't improve or didn't give them all, give their all, yeah, you don't criticize, but you know, the newspaper story is still going to be about the one who wins, mm-hmm. no matter whether it was a better effort or not. So, you know, being aware of effort, being aware of dedication and progress and helping them to see that that's what it's about. Not, okay, there are fast runners and slow runners. You know, we're all in progress.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, that kind of ties back into several things we talked about not placing all of your pride or your ego on the result and, you know, making sure you're given the effort. So it's obviously all interwoven and very much, you know, there's a lot of parallel lessons that, if you don't get it the first time, you keep reading through the book or just paying attention to how your life continues to change and evolve and how running continues to change and evolve in it. You're going to get those lessons eventually. And then, like you said, hopefully, especially for those that maybe their kids are runners or the coaches that are working with youth runners, so you can make sure to impart that wisdom to them as well, because like you said, they're probably not the ones that are going to be reaching out for this book until you know, somewhere down the line, maybe they'll find it to try to figure out or to get back into the sport, or maybe they're still in the sport, whatever. But yeah, that's an important thing to remember that everybody is just constantly, you know, trying to improve or constantly trying to do their best. And we get lost on that sometimes just by being too focused on the results.
Yeah. And I think there's a reason we're focused on the results, because, you know, the world is such that you don't get the scholarship for being most improved. Right. And we sort of have this, you did your best tends to be a cop out. But in reality, in the world out there, doing your best is the hardest thing. You know, again, it's harder to do your best than just to win sometimes, mm-hmm. depending on where your abilities are. And I think it bodes well in the long term, learning that your best and growth is the goal is going to serve you a lot better than just enjoying being fast. Even somebody like, you know, Dina Castor said that she always thought that, you know, she won because she was a fast runner. And if she didn't win, it was because she didn't have the ability. But then when after post-collegiate, she was going to stop. And Joe Vigil talked to her and really got her in the mindset of, you know, the goal is to see how good I can be. And, mm-hmm. and that took her all the way to the Olympics. But then she says, you know, the real reward has not been in the accolades and in the medals. It's been in becoming the best version of myself I could be.
Yeah, yeah, that personal continued growth and trying to always just put your best foot out there, I think, is something that can certainly, you know, can help anybody improve and that's the thing to strive for, and certainly not always perfect, not always in that headspace, but certainly that's always the goal, is just to continue to grow and do the best that I can in whatever situation, running and parenting and my marriage and my work, like all of those things, just always trying to get better and recognizing that there's going to be plenty of days that I fall short, but it doesn't mean that I'm a failure. It just means I got to, you know, try again the next day.
Yeah, and it means It means there's a chance for growth. I mean, in yep. relationships, it's huge. And we get this defensiveness of sort of, well, I was trying. It's like, okay. And I failed. Okay. So mm-hmm. what did I learn from this? And what can I do better?
Right. Right. Yeah. It's something I've talked about a few times with various people about kind of the social media situation, where it's like you look on Instagram, you look on Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and you don't very often see somebody post a picture of their Garmin on a day that was just terrible. You know, like, this is the worst run I've had in so long. Like, everybody's always posting like, oh, great run, and look at, you know, the great workout, here are my splits, blah 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 blah. But when they have those off days, you don't see those things posted. And I just, you know, remind myself when I have a bad day, or when one of my clients has a bad day, or whatever the case might be, that like, everybody has those bad days. And like, you know, you can't appreciate the good days without appreciating those bad days, without having to learn and grow and figure out how to do better. So, you know, another one of those lessons that just permeates all areas of life. And running, I think, at least for me, has been maybe the best teacher of that than any other, anything else that I've come across.
Yeah, that's great.
So as we're getting to that point here today, Jonathan, of wrapping things up, I'm gonna throw another philosophical question at you. I know we did this last time, and I'm gonna do it again, and I'm gonna even color a little bit farther off script than usual, because I have a list of four or five questions that I somewhat, you know, kind of rotate through, or based on the conversation, we'll pick one of those. But today I'm gonna go off of my normal list and ask a question that I don't really like to ask very often, but I think it fits the theme of your book and kind of the things that we've talked about today. And that's kind of the future question. So, you know, at this point, you know, running has been a big part of your life for 40 years, continues to be a big part of your life. And I'm going to imagine probably will continue to be a big part of your life. And we talked a little bit earlier about some of the ways that you've adapted and you've you know, kind of changed your perspective, changed how you measure success in the sport, even though you're still being competitive, but the methods of it have changed a little bit and adapted over time. If you could take a stab at it, because again, I know asking the future question, there's no way to really know for sure other than to just put something out there. But how do you see running and your performance, the way that you continue to participate in the sport? How do you anticipate or predict or any ideas of things that you know, from going through the book, from writing the book, from doing the interviews, of ways that you might continue to adapt and evolve to continue to make running be something that you enjoy, that you can still compete in as you go forward? You know, what are some of the adaptations that you think might be in store for you in the next decade or so of your running life?
Really good question. And I have, yeah, doing the book has made me think about this a lot. And I think it set me up for it. I'd say even a couple of years ago, I couldn't imagine being, you know, 65, 70 and running and what that would look like. And I think now I can. Mm-hmm. So I think some of the things I've changed with the book, one is this chapter on, you know, just as far as patterns and training patterns, is training more by feel and trying to get rid of the obligation of training and the expectation, you know, whatever that is, miles per week or a certain pace on a certain run or what speed work is. I'm much more comfortable, you know, in the middle of a run feeling good, just throwing in, you know, 10 by telephone pull on, telephone mm-hmm. pull off or something. And I think not only is that just made it more fun, but it's been really good training in that sense. And I can see myself doing that, you know, again, not going to the track and cranking out 16 by a quarter or something. I probably can't, it's hard to imagine doing that at 70, but doing some pickups and I think I'm doing it more often, and that's good too. Just, you know, running hard when I feel like I can run hard and running easy the rest of the time and being more comfortable with that and not having to die, not having, you know, my average pace is totally irrelevant. You know, mm-hmm. what matters is how it feels and whether I'm feeling, and I'm doing speed and hills and drills and stuff more so I can feel good on the run, you know, rather than I have to do this in order to be fast enough to race a certain day, but just the ability to head out on any day and run, you know, a good run, 45 minutes to a couple of hours, at a comfortable pace, feeling strong and light. That really is the goal. I still enjoy racing, and as in the many people I talk to, that the two complement each other, because if I have a race out there, it helps me be more consistent, helps me do the training so I can do that. But the real end goal is that feeling of being fit and alive and able to do this thing I love whenever I want to. And that's worth, you know, that's worth doing 40 miles a week and speed work and all that, and not only worth it, but that is, you're doing it, you're doing what your goal is while you're while you're getting there. It seems so simple, but somehow it gets perverted into this, it's all a means to an end. And, you know, and people talk about having to do their long run because, you know, that's what's on their training schedule. It's like, wow, you get to go out on a Saturday morning and run 20 miles. Just the ability to do that is worth celebrating. It's worth marveling about. and I hope I'm still doing that, you know, 20 years from now or 30 years. And then Roger Robinson, who's in the book I talked about already, he's had two knee replacements now. And here he is, somebody who set a world, he won the world championship, master championship in his 50s. Just posted on Facebook yesterday that he did a 5K with his, you know, second knee. His first time he's been able to run on it at all. And he ran something like 45 minutes, but he's 78 years old, you know, right. So, and he's excited about it. He's celebrating that, you know, where he is today, he's still out there. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And you know, the one thing that you said, you know, it's so simple, yet we make it so hard. And I was just kept thinking to myself, yeah, leave it to us as human beings to take something fairly simple and try to make it harder than it needs to be. So yeah, just continue to enjoy it. If you're having fun, you're in a good place. So great thoughts to wrap up on today, Jonathan. Definitely appreciate it. And once again, guys, jonathanbeverly.com is the website. You can get the books there. You can also get them obviously on Amazon and any place that the books are pretty much sold. On the Twitter, on the Instagram, if you want to connect with Jonathan there, at jbevrun, disruns.com/444. If you missed the original chat, you can check out our first conversation there, and disruns.com/504 for this episode. We'll have all the links and everything in the show notes. And again, the book title, Run Strong, Stay Hungry. Good reading. Good something to maybe find under the tree on Christmas Day, or just to pick up for a wintry day. You cold, don't feel like getting outside, sit by the fire, have a glass of wine or a cup of cocoa or whatever it might be, and enjoy it. It's a good read. It's an easy read, and definitely can't recommend it enough. So Run Strong, Stay Hungry. Get it and check it out, and let me know what you think of it once you do. So Jonathan, again, thank you for taking the time today. Really appreciate it. Glad we're able to reconnect again and do this again. Certainly a joy, and wishing you nothing but the best going forward. A great 2018 and a good another 15, 20, 25 years of running the sport. Continue to adapt and evolve, and I'll do the same, and maybe our paths will cross again at some point in the future.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk with you.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Jonathan today, and as always, I would be curious to know, what stood out to you from the conversation? What was something that we talked about that struck a chord with you, or that stood out, or that made you stop and go, you know, kind of a things that make you go, situation. For those of you that are of the right age range and maybe had a CNC Music Factory tape back in the day. But back onto the topic at hand. What was your takeaway from today's episode? For me, it really just boiled down to that idea of adaptability, of changing as we go. You know, nothing is ever the same. Everything in this world is always changing, always evolving, always hopefully always improving, but not always the case. Sometimes improving, sometimes going the other way. And we as runners, we as humans are no exception to that. You know, the person you are right now listening to this will be different than the person you are tomorrow. You may not notice it, but even, you know, I mean, just break it down to the cellular level, to the microscopic level. You know, cells are reproducing and replacing old ones all the time. And it even expands out onto the larger level than that. You know, the fitness you gain today will pay off, you know, tomorrow. You know, just the changes that we make on and just subsequent or not subsequent, but minuscule changes, very, very micro changes, but little bits over and over and over. It we're just constantly changing, constantly evolving, constantly adapting. So of course, running for us needs to change and adapt as well. As we get older, as our priorities change, as our life changes, as we get slower, that's just kind of going to be a fact of aging. You know, at some point you're going to be the fastest that you ever were, no matter when you started, no matter how long you've been running. At some point you're going to reach your peak, and then, you know, you're going to be getting a little bit slower from there. And we've got to be okay with that. We've got to adjust our expectations. We've got to, you know, make different choices as far as what we're doing to stay healthy, to continue to run. There's just always things that we, are doing, can do, need to do, to just change and adapt and you know, hopefully just continue to kind of grow as runners. So that was my takeaway. And like we talked about, if you check out the book, Run Strong, Stay Hungry, you'll definitely, it won't take you long to realize that adapting is a necessary part of, what we as runners have to do if we want to continue running for the long haul. So I'm going to assume that most of you listening are going to want to be running for another decade plus, if not even, you know, multiple decades like I do. And that means that we all have to come to grips with this idea that we're going to have to change as our bodies change, as we change. And that's okay. And that's okay. Running is still going to be there. Running is still going to be running. And it may look a little different than it does right now, but that's okay. We're going to look a little different in 10 years than we do right now as well. So, you know, running should. It's only makes sense that running is going to as well. So anyway, that long and drawn out, but that was my takeaway. What was yours? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. And you've got 280 characters now, so you can be almost as long and drawn out as me on the Twitters. But you can also shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And obviously, you can always head to the show notes, which for this episode will be DizRuns.com/504. And you can leave a comment there. And as per usual, we'll have things linked up from the episode in the show notes, links to on Amazon to get this book, to get Jonathan's first book, Your Best Stride. And anything else we talked about will be linked as well. So with that, thanks once again to Health IQ for sponsoring today's episode. HealthIQ.com/DizRuns. If you're in the market for life insurance, check them out. Get a good rate just simply because you're a runner. You know, it's a pretty nice little discount for just doing something that you're going to keep doing anyway. So with that, let's put a bow on this thing officially. Thank you guys for listening. Hope that you enjoyed it. Hope you have a great rest of your day. And certainly look forward to talking to you again soon. All right. But until then, be well, take care, and talk soon, guys.